Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Previously on The Rundown with Mike Shaw.
There's more reward derived in the effort and strain process than there is in winning, right? So if you're working hard towards something and you've worked hard towards something for weeks, months, maybe you've been training for a marathon, and you show up on the day of the marathon, it's going to feel really good when you complete the marathon, like really good. But nothing will feel as good as the effort and strain process it took to get there.
On this episode of The Rundown, I caught up with master sprinter and multiple record holder, Carla Del Grande. She loved running in school, but found a new fire for it in her 40s. And now she's been inducted into two Hall of Fames and awarded WMA Female Athlete of the Decade. She's the woman who came closest to running her age in the 400 meter, falling short by just 1 second. And it's something she hopes to achieve later this year. This episode is brought to you by the Wings for Life World Run, taking place on Sunday, May 9th at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. With the global pandemic still forcing postponements and cancellations, finding a race has been harder than ever. Luckily, the Wings for Life World Run has a brand new app experience to have us all race together in the safest way possible, virtually. Join the Rundown listeners and guests from all around the world for the 2021 all-virtual edition of the Wings for Life World Run. There's only a few more days to register, so make sure you download the Wings for Life World Run app free on your iOS App Store and register now. Not only is it a fun event, it's also for a great cause. 100% of the proceeds from your $28 entry fee are invested in search to find a cure for spinal cord injury. Wings for Life has funded over 200 projects worldwide, including 34 projects in Canada. Once you've signed up, don't forget to encourage your friends and family to join, and let us know about it on Instagram by tagging The Rundown. Good luck with your training, and I can't wait to see how far you get on May 9th. In this week's news, Cam Levins ran a personal best in the half marathon with an incredible time of 1 hour, 1 minute, and 4 seconds. With a time that fast, he also would have set a Canadian record, but since it wasn't during a certified race, it won't get marked in the record books. Levins himself seems surprised by the result, but hopes he'll get a chance to break the 22-year-old record sometime in the near future. He's living proof that even in a raceless year, you could still get yourself in incredible shape. This episode is also brought to you by VeloFix. As runners, there's not much to worry about in terms of equipment maintenance or tune-ups. But for those cyclists and triathletes out there, and speaking from my own personal experience, finding a bike shop with efficient customer-facing mechanics can be a challenge. Well, now it's time to change gears with VeloFix. With easy online booking, VeloFix will send a maintenance van straight to your door and provide same-day service with a smile. Head to VeloFix.com and use promo code LaRundown15 for 15% off your next tune-up. And if you happen to be looking for a bike mechanic gig, VeloFix is looking to expand their fleet in Quebec. Check out VeloFix.com to apply. Make sure to check the show notes for links to information about these stories, as well as the ongoing protests. There will also be a list of funds and foundations that need your support, so please consider donating to help support this movement. That's all for now. Gotta run. So as I go through life, every birthday that passes, I always say age is just a number, and it's all about how you feel. If you don't believe, if you don't want to take my word for it, maybe our next guest can convince you of that. She's 67, a master sprinter, just got back into running in her 40s, inducted into two Hall of Fames, holds multiple Canadian and world records, and she's been named World Masters Athletics Female Sprinter of the Year, as well as awarded the WMA Female Athlete of the Decade, which is so impressive. I'm impressed by this woman and so thrilled to welcome to The Rundown, Carla Del Grande.
Thank you for having me. And actually, I'm now 68. Had a birthday.
I was going to ask
there.
You. Yeah, is that number? Yeah. So actually.
So it's just a number.
Exactly, right? It's all about how you feel, like I said. So hopefully people can learn a little something from you and kind of how you got to this point. So how's everything going with you with training and in these crazy times still with COVID?
It's great. I mean, we this is what I do. I train for track, and so it's a lifestyle and way of life. So last year when COVID first started, I was actually on the plane getting ready to participate in the Canadian Masters Athletics Championships, indoor championships in St. John, New Brunswick. And there were quite a number of people on the plane that were going to the same meet. Obviously not a full plane, but, you know, a seat here, you know, zigzagging up the aisles. I knew some of the people that were there. A lot of them happened to be from Saskatchewan, just the plane that we were on. And it was announced somewhere near the front of the plane, somebody heard the meet is canceled. And it was like, it spread through the aisles back to the back of the plane. The meet's canceled. And it's like totally stunned reaction. What do you mean the meet's canceled? They're canceling a track meet? And it was just all the things that we'd been hearing up to that point. It was about March 11th, 12th, 13th, somewhere in there. All the things we'd been hearing up until that point were not real. They weren't quite in my, I just didn't quite believe what was really happening at that point. And then when the meet's canceled and you get off the plane and you realize, oh my gosh, I'm not coming here for a track meet. We've got to make arrangements to get a plane back to Toronto. So that's when COVID really became real for me. And because it's my lifestyle and what I do, my coach, Jamal Miller from Variety Village Athletics Club, we all made the decision that we're going to carry on because this is what we do. And we don't know what's going to happen. So as soon as I got back to Toronto and we kind of regrouped and kind of said, okay, now what are we supposed to do? Can't do this, can't do that. This is closed, that's closed. So what are we going to do? So Jamal's plan was, we're going to stay ready. We're going to do the best that we can to stay fit, stay race ready, and be ready to go whatever happens, because we didn't know. We had no idea. So we started with indoor workouts, and it was weird. It was very discombobulating and kind of, okay, how are we going to do this? So there was something that Jamal had already done with us that was part of our training that is that's what he incorporated. It's using a harness around your waist. So the harness has to be anchored to something like a doorknob or some people had squat racks. Some people had like a stair banister. So kind of a stretchy band around your waist so you can run on the spot, basically. We call it sprinter high knees or harness high knees. So a lot of the workouts that Jamal produced for us were based around that. He modified our drills to do in a hallway. He modified our warm-up. Normally we do skipping, we do hip mobility, we do some dynamic movements, you know, all the things that runners normally do outside, standing next to a fence or whatever, and you're, you know, swinging your legs or, you know, doing scorpions, eagles, those kinds of things, or Russian walks, kicking your leg up, that kind of thing, all the kind of stretching things. So all of those things were incorporated, plus the harness high knees. And that's kind of the basis for the workouts. So that was the start of our COVID training indoors.
Do you find that that was a good strategy, looking back at where you are today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jamal and I just did a seminar for Canadian Masters Athletics, which is the organization that kind of, governs all of the masters track in Canada. So we did a seminar for them talking about it. And because we just said this was the way that we came up with to show that we could still have speed and still have power. And so then when we were able to go outside, like, again, we were in small groups, we were happened to be on a soccer field in Scarborough, where I train. So we were on a, because the track was not open. So we were on a soccer field. So I don't know, I think the number at the time was 5, and then it became 10. But at the beginning, it was 5. So it was 5 of us at a time, and we're running sprints on the field. And I'm like, whoa, this is not bad. I'm running, like, I'm feeling like I've still got some power. I've still got some speed. So, and then when I actually got on the track last summer, when Athletics Ontario actually, started to open up meets and we had socially distanced meets, et cetera, I was like, wow, I'm okay. I was able to keep my speed. I was very surprised. And I'm telling Jamal, like, we're on a field. Like, I'm not sure I feel comfortable. Like, I don't think I can go fast on a soccer field. And he's like, trust me. So he's from Barbados. He says, this is the way they do it in the Caribbean. If they do it this way in the Caribbean, it's we can do this. So we made it work from inside to the soccer field. And then eventually transitioning to the track, we were good. It worked. Mm.
That's awesome. And I feel like I have the same, or have had the same, like, mentality as what you guys are doing. Like, for me personally, it was like, okay, all the events are canceled, but it's a good time to catch up on basics and still get stronger as a runner. Like, you don't need an event necessarily to make progress in the sport. So mm-hmm. I love that you guys continued to do what you needed to do in order to, like, at least maintain what you had so that you could perform, whenever the races came back. Was it hard to stay motivated though at the same time, knowing that there wasn't an event?
For sure. I was going to say that, so last summer we were to have the World Masters Athletics Championships in Toronto. And we were so looking forward to it because I've traveled all around the world to competitions, to meets, and to Europe and Asia and so on, South America, been all over. And to have it in Toronto is really exciting. We were so looking forward to it. And so that got canceled very early on. I'm going to say late March, early April, sometime around there, that was canceled. So to not have a goal like that in front of us was really hard. And for some people, I mean, I like having goals. I do have time goals and, event goals, that kind of thing. And yes, that's important. But at the same time, if this is what you do, it's a way of life and it's a way of fitness and a way of health. So then you just keep going. So one of the things that was really important and really special about my group was that we really encouraged each other. So part of my group, it's a pretty vast, diverse group, but part of my group is, there are other older women, some of them competitive, like I am, like they're going to compete, and some of them more for recreation and fitness. So we kind of set up our own little WhatsApp group. And we encouraged each other. So at the beginning, we kind of started trying to have our practice, our home practice, at the same time as our, practice at our facility would have been. Like, everything kind of fell apart because kids were off school, on school, whatever, homeschooling, other family members were working, not working, working from home, in and out of, you know, wherever they were working out. It, like, that kind of fell apart, that the practice time was not going to work out that way. So what we did is keep track of each other by a whole whack of WhatsApp messages, text messages, phone calls. We tried doing, you know, sort of like a, it wasn't Zoom. We used Google Hangouts for a little bit. You know, that was kind of hard because you're knocking over the equipment in the hallway, and it was a little weird doing that, trying to keep everybody on, you know, on track. But we found if we sent each other messages and said, okay, this part of the workout, I'm having trouble with this, you know, somebody give me a little tip, or, you know, this is really tough. I'm having, you know, I need encouragement for this. Like, we did that for each other. So that worked really, really well. So our motivation was like, let's make it work. Let's keep going. So we made it work.
Yeah, that's so great. And to have that support system around to encourage you, you know, through workouts, and that's half the battle a lot of the time. So just getting through it together, I mean, in a time where connection isn't what we're used to, you know, or like social interaction isn't what we're used to, you have to like rely on those means to support one another and stay in touch.
Absolutely. And it's also like makes you accountable. Like if somebody else is doing the same workout and, you know, at the same time or whatever, same day, and I'm like, you know, okay, I better get this workout done because they're going to do it. And, you know, I want to report back. I did it, you know. And so there's a whole bunch of that. And even if it's one other person, like when I did long distance running, it was the same thing. If you don't show up for a long run that you're doing together, like, you know, that person is going to suffer, miss out on their run. And, you know, once you get going, you're great. You know, like if it's, whether it's supporting each other, just being there side by side, or whether you're able to chat, whatever it is, or, you know, I always say like to moan and groan through a workout with somebody else is good. It's, it keeps you going.
Yeah. It's better to do it with somebody than to do it alone for sure.
Yeah.
Have you got into the virtual stuff? Have you done a few tests during this time?
No, I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to me. I really love the competitions that we have through Masters. It's very much about the camaraderie and the people that you meet. And I just didn't think virtually that was going to work for me. The World Masters Association did put on some virtual events, and they recorded results and so on, but I didn't enter any of it. But on the other hand, I was really lucky that Athletics Ontario did put on some events. So it was, I'm going to say late July, August, we had some events. Now, mind you, they were like, there's no spectators. The only people that were on the track were the people competing and, you know, the few officials. You had to warm up outside the track and, you know, just go in when it's your event, do your run, whatever, leave the track, no high fives, like we usually do, that kind of thing. Now this wasn't Masters. This was everybody. So it was, was open. So, actually there were not a lot of Masters that did it, but I did because I'd been training and there's a meet. So, and we had every other lane, and in between, the lanes were switched and the starting blocks were sprayed. And, you know, I felt very safe. So there's ways to run track. There's, you know, it can be done. You got to think outside the box, this whole thing, all of this COVID stuff, you got to think outside the box. Like, there's ways to make it work.
Yeah, for sure. And how did that event go for you?
Oh, really well. I did two things last summer that I'm very, very pleased with. One is I did hurdles, which I had started 2019, in the fall of 2019. I kind of wore my coach down on it because I kind of said I wanted to try hurdles. And he was not in favor, like starting at 67, whatever it was. I was like, he's like, you're going to break every bone. This is not going to go well. And so he started with a couple of the women from my group. There was one that was already a hurdler, one that was brand new to track athletics, whatever, not much of an athletics background, but very keen. Another one that was, she was like me, oh, let's give this a try. And so he figured if he could, you know, take our motley crew and, you know, make some kind of hurdlers out of us, that that this would work. So he did some kind of preliminary stuff with the person who had not done any hurdling, not much athletic background. And she was loving it, and she picked it up really quickly. So he thought, oh, okay, this is good. This is good. So we started the hurdles. And so then when the lockdown came, and we were thinking, like, well, I was thinking, I'm not going to get a chance to really try this. Like, this is so disappointing. Like, I was ready for this, for 2020 summer, to get, you know, a couple of events in where I could try hurdles. And so during lockdown at home, I had a little system with lead leg, trail leg from my bed. If I put a quilt on a certain way, I had the right height. I could practice lead leg, trail leg. And my husband was going to, he was supposed to be making me hurdles out of PVC pipes. And I don't know, something, it did not go well with Home Depot at the time. Like, they were closed and they didn't have this, they didn't have that. And so that didn't work out so well. So he came up with two supports for IKEA tables. Like, just, you know, it's just the, like the bars that go underneath. They were perfect. They were perfect. So two IKEA table supports with a bit of padding on the top to save my shins. And so that's what I practiced hurdles with at home. Then when we went outside onto the grass at the soccer field.
So when you practice at home, you don't practice like the speed, but more the motion of how to do it?
No. No, that's a picture that would... No, but yeah, no, I'd be, you know, firing out the window on doing that. No, just right. Just kind of, just the lead leg, trail leg, and just the motion, the motion. And Sage Watson, our Canadian hurdler, 400 meter hurdler, because that's what the elites do. Mine's a shorter distance. Mine's 300 meter hurdles. So the 400 meter hurdler, Sage Watson, she had some drills on her Instagram that showed, I'm going to say she had two or three hurdles in her barn in Alberta. And she showed these drills. And I was like, I know these drills. I could do these drills. And so I could do them with my two hurdle. I just used two. In a small bedroom, it worked. So you have to be creative. You have to be creative. So the sum of that story is, yeah, it worked out really well. I was able to do hurdle events and broke the Canadian record in my age group for the 300 meter hurdles. And I was like, wow, the speed is there. We made the hurdles work. Like, how cool is that, that I was able to do that? Like, that was a real thrill to kind of see something like that come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. That's so great. And what was the other thing? You said there was two things.
Yeah, 400 meters. That's kind of my focus event, 400 meters. So among the men, it's kind of a thing that they try to run their age in the 400. Okay, so now we're talking like so masters men. So it's not easy to do. It's kind of a select club, and yet so when men do it, they kind of celebrate. It's nothing official, nothing recorded anywhere, but there's, you know, you'll see it on their Facebook page or their Instagram page that, oh, I did it. I ran my age in the 400. And there's guys on Facebook that are trying to do that for this summer. So Dave Elbow is a photographer in Colorado, and he did an article about it, about running your age in the 400, about for men. And he put it in the article that perhaps I might be the first. He named a couple of other women. And he said, he said at the time that I was the closest. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, wait a minute, I can go a little bit. I can get closer than that. So I was sort of thinking, okay, what can I do? So at age 67, can I run 67? So I had run 68 the summer before, and I had a few issues with it. Like, I knew that I could go faster. Like, outdoors 400 is really, you're at a lot of whim of the wind, because you can get it on the going out and coming back, and, you know, you don't have a windless day in the 400. And when you're really, really tired coming down the home stretch, you got a wind against you, like, that's so tough. Right. So I always know that I look at 400 times and I'm like, okay, what was the wind? They don't give you wind readings because it's both, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So don't ever let a 400 meter or a non 400 meter person would tell you, oh, it doesn't matter. They had the wind with them one way and then they had the wind against them the other way. So it evens out. It does not. It does not. So, so I had some 400 times, let's just say, that I thought, oh, I can do better than this. So last summer I did run 68 when I was 67. So that's the closest that I know of that a woman has come, like, within 1 second of running her age. Yeah, so this summer I'm trying to do 68 again at 68. So
okay, and then you'd nail it at that point.
Hope so. Hope so.
Yeah, I think you got me beat, to be honest. I think that might be my PB in the 400. It's hard. Wow, like, you try and do 400s, and like I like doing it as part of, I'm more of a marathoner. I've worked my way up, but, you know, 400 workouts are no joke, and trying to, like, run a fast four is so, it's like once around the track, right? But it's so difficult. What's the strategy? Can you share a strategy for a good 400?
I laugh when you say that. I tell I'm standing on the starting line saying, how hard can this be once around?
Right. Once around. Yeah.
Once around. Yeah. No, it, like, yeah, 400 is, it's hard. It's a challenge. And that's why I like it. Like, the pure speed of the 100, that is something to behold. That's pretty awesome. Like, just speed. Mm-hmm. 200 I really, really love, but 400 is, it's got that extra challenge. So get out hard. As my coach says, you can't get it back. So I've had two primary coaches in my master's lifetime. So first one was the same, Bruce Mitchell, and the second one, Jamal Miller, is the same. Like, get out hard, you can't get it back. So you can't go out slowly expecting that, oh, once you get to the 200 mark or the 300 mark, you can just pick it up. Like, it does not happen. You've used up it's also based on energy systems and so on. And I don't really get into that. I just know that you can't get it back. You just can't.
Right.
So you get out hard, and then you maintain. And then, so at, you know, at 200, 250, 300, whatever you and your coach have decided, like, where are you in your training? You got to pick it up and give whatever you've got left. So yeah, the strategy is get out hard and basically hold on.
Just hang on for dear life. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the attempt. Like, I think my best one, I that's the exact strategy I went out with. Cause at 200, like, your lactic acid is already, you know, burning, and it's, you just got to go on guts the last 200.
Yeah.
Which doesn't, is obviously, like,
yeah.
So you train. Which doesn't look pretty a lot of times, but.
I know, it never looks pretty. So you train so that instead of being at the 200, that you're going to last to 250, and you're going to last to 300, last to 350, you know, so. You know, that's, it's hard.
It's the real deal for sure. But yeah, and for context, I'm 37. So yeah, anyways.
Yeah.
So good on you. That's amazing. So was it always meant to be this way? How did, you know, growing up, were you an athletic kid? Did you have sprinting in your blood at that time? Or, like, how did it look like for you as a kid growing up?
Yeah, we were a pretty active family. My dad was the kind of guy that got home. He actually arranged his shifts at was at Firestone in Hamilton, arranged his shifts that they were early, got home early. So we're out of school. He grabs the kids in the neighborhood and he takes us across to the park. Mostly it was playing ball because he was kind of he came from the prairies and kind of, it's a softball kind of thing. And he's out throwing balls at us. I wasn't so good at that. I got my thumb sprained all the time because I was not good at catching or throwing and that kind of stuff. But running, he was also big at the running. So he would be saying like, you know, race you to the next pole or next tree or whatever. So a lot of that kind of stuff. And we were next to a high school that, you know, had long jump pits. So we were sometimes over there using the pits after hours, racing, you know, that kind of stuff. And he was a decent runner too, not like any not any formal sense, but his company had picnics every summer. And every time he would come home winning a fishing tackle box for being the winner of the men's race. And he used to tell people that, yeah, he said, I'd be standing on the starting line, he'd say, and he said, I would look down the line and, you know, sizing up the competition. He was kind of short, kind of a little bit wiry. And some of the other guys would be saying, you know, count him out. He's short, small. He's not going to do anything. He says, after a few years, those guys would look down and they would say, oh no, there's that little short guy. He's really fast. Watch out for him. So he would win the men's race and win a fishing tackle box. And we had multiple fishing tackle boxes in his workroom that he had won. And so, you know, the running came naturally because he liked it and enjoyed it. I did a lot of different little things in elementary school and high school. I did a little bit of gymnastics, a little bit of played some volleyball and basketball and those kinds of things. Nothing really stuck in particular or had my passion like the track. I did really enjoy the track. So I did that in high school and 1 year of university. Had joined a track club in high school. So every weekend, I've got two brothers. The youngest one was into soccer, and the one closest in age to me, he was also into running. So both of us would go to track club. And on the weekends, we'd be going to meets. So we did a fair bit of that for a few years.
And was that a popular sport at the time when you were growing up? Or?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, in my world it was. So yeah, there was a lot of soccer and a lot of baseball, but yeah, it was fairly popular.
Mm. And do you remember what you liked about it, like initially? Like what were your initial feelings about running and running fast?
Just the speed and the winning, I guess. just enjoyed it. Just, you know, it's just a feeling of freedom and the speed, yeah, pushing your body to go fast.
Mm-hmm. Would you say you were like competitive as a kid?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. The brother that's closest in age to me. Yeah. He and I were in that sense. Cause you know, I'm the oldest and that sort of thing is, yeah, there's a bit of that.
It always helps to have a brother, an older brother to push you along.
Yeah, younger brother. Yeah.
And so like how far did the running go for you? Like did it stay with school or did you see a future in that beyond that?
You know, that's a really interesting question. So at age 68, you gotta think back. So in those days, it wasn't a career choice. Or like I wouldn't say as a career, but even as a little sideline. Like I look at these runners now, like Sage Watson and Misha Powell and Crystal Emanuel and all these young women that they're making it their career. Like that's their career for now, of course, as long as they are, you know, still striving for the Olympics and so on. It's a it's a career choice. It's a path that they can take, and it will jumpstart them to other things, just like Perdita Felicien, you know, now a book author and you know, hosting TV shows, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a jumping off point for them. Back then, in say late 60s, 70s, even probably into 1980s, no, that wasn't. So it sounds a little narrow to say you were going to be a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher, but it was kind of like that. Sports was always kind of a secondary thing. In Ontario, we have the big championship meet is OFSA. So right. All the high schoolers in Ontario come and they compete at OFSA. There was no OFSA for girls until quite a few years after I was in high school. So we had a local meet, we had an area meet, and then we were done. And meanwhile, I'm seeing, you know, all the boys from my club, my brother, go on to OFSA. And like what? Like there wasn't one for girls. Like I wish I had fought against that and spoke up and said, like, wait a minute, why don't we have a meet? They have a meet. Why don't we? But, you know, that's not the way I was or the way things were. But so we didn't have that. And then in the States, Title IX came along, which was 1972, when they said that if there is a boys program at a school, then they had to have a girls program comparable at the same school. So it changed things. And interestingly enough, a lot of women in masters that started later in life started because they hadn't had the chance in high school to go on with whatever sport it was. Like I won't say it's just track and field, but I would say in other sports as well. I will see stories and they're asking the women, well, what did you do in high school? What did you do in university and so on? And they said, well, I stopped because there wasn't anything more for me. So, and then when Title IX came along and changed the scene that, you know, I mean, even if you look at distance running, there wasn't women running the marathon in the Olympics till 1984, Joan Benoit, like they're, those things, oh, you're too delicate. You know, you can't run past 800 meters. That's, you know, it's too hard. Can't run a marathon. Are you kidding? You know, that's like all those kinds of things. And for track and field, because I'd had a little bit of a gymnastics background, I kind of thought, oh, maybe I could be a triple jumper or pole vault for some reason. I look at it kind of bizarre now that those were two events that I picked, but I was thinking I did want to try in high school, and I was told, no, your uterus will fall out.
Oh my God.
Okay. And I'm age 16 and I'm thinking, yeah, so like, you know, you'll never have kids. Yeah. So like, it really wasn't like something that really concerned me at that stage. And so I'm thinking like, why didn't I protest? Like, why didn't I say this is nonsense? Like, who ever heard of such a thing? And so, other women have said the same thing, that they heard the same story. And I was like, seriously, why did we not get together and protest this ridiculousness?
Mm-hmm. And was that maybe something that you guys discussed amongst yourselves at that time, or not even?
Or not
just
then.
Kind of accepted it for.
Yeah, not then. We just accepted it. Like, what was wrong with us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't really make sense all that much, and it's not just in, like you're saying, in athletics, but in all sports. You know, like it slowly things opened up for whatever reason. I don't know why. Like you're saying, in the States, for them to open up programs for men and women alike, I think that was a good step forward for running. But like, how like looking back, like how weird does that sound, you know?
Yeah. And we should have done it, because look at the nonsense that the women's basketball teams in the NCAA went through with the weight room nonsense. Like the women were given a weight room that was like a, like, I don't know what you call it, like one bar of weights stacked on it. And the men had this elaborate weight room with squat bars and all kinds of equipment and so on. Like it was a huge room. And the women were given this one very mediocre, sad looking, you know, rack of weights. It still happens. So when I saw something like that, I mean, that was about 2 weeks ago, and I'm thinking like, wow, like it should have spoken up back then, and then we wouldn't have to deal with this nonsense now.
Yeah, even today, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I like to ask is, you know, what would you tell a 20-year-old version of yourself? Does that kind of answer my question? Or
yeah, for sure.
You would say,
yeah. Should have spoken up. Should have spoken up for those kinds of things, but yeah, and I should have carried on. You know, we didn't have scholarships, athletic scholarships in those days either for girls. My brother got a athletic academic scholarship. I got an academic scholarship, but how much more cool would that have been to have had the, you know, athletics added onto it? Where, you know, girls today have that choice. And I've got girls from my club, you know, looking for, you know, good times and trying to get that scholarship. And they work hard and they get the marks. And then they add the athletics to it. Like, wow, it's a good combination. So guys have always had that and women have not. So, yeah, I wish I'd spoken up.
Mm. Yeah, especially if that's like, you know, your passion too. You know, it's like it's a point of pride to get an education and then get an education because you're good at athletics too, right? Like to be able to go to schools you want and to be able to perform at both ends of it. What was it? So what became your priority at that point when athletics wasn't even an option, I guess, to pursue? What was the priority or what became the priority for you?
Oh, definitely going into teaching and then had my daughter and, you know, so just life got in the way of that kind of thing. So, you know, I became a teacher, totally loved coaching track and field and, you know, putting on track meets for the kids every year, coaching them, at, you know, to go to our area meets and that kind of thing. So, oh yeah, like your career and family, you know, become the priority.
And so you were teaching kids how to run.
Oh yeah,
you used to do.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, that was fun. That's always been fun.
So did you, because like running was a way for you to stay in shape? Like, did it remain in any part of your life, or did you exchange it for other things in order to stay healthy and fit?
Yeah, kind of exchanged it for other things. So I did. I did aerobics classes at the Y. I did cross-country skiing. I loved nothing serious. It's just like, oh, let's go for a ski or let's go for a hike or, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to classes this week, and did some weight training, that kind of thing. So yeah, I always felt like I've got to do something to keep fit, but not so formally or so much a lifestyle like I do now. When I was about, I'm going to say, late 40s, mid 40s, a friend at school wanted to go to the running room. And, so we would go once a week to the, they have Wednesday night run club, and then they have the Sunday morning run club, and it was fabulous. So he and I would go after school, head down to the running room, go for a run, did the same on Sunday. And so I got back into that. And that was a very gentle come back into running. At first I thought, I'm not even going to be able to run like for 15 minutes straight, 20 minutes straight, 30 minutes straight. So I kind of worked up to that. And, you know, you got to hand it to the runner, running room for doing that kind of thing, making it easy for people to get into running and to do that. And so then I started doing 5Ks and 10Ks, and I eventually did 8 half marathons. I did around the Bay twice, which is, you know, Hamilton, Burlington, around Hamilton Harbor, Burlington Bay, whichever side of the lake you come from, that's what you call it. So, and I ran past, not on that race, but on a couple of races that were held in that area, I ran past the house I grew up in. And,
oh, wow.
You know, yeah, that was very cool. And even around, you know, Burlington Bay, Hamilton Harbor, like where my dad worked, and, you know, my aunt used to live over here. And, you know, that was very cool to run through those old neighborhoods. That was lots of fun.
That's a race I want to do around the Bay.
Oh, you must. Things. Especially usually being held at the end of March. It's a great time. Right. So you've run through the winter. I used to love running, like doing the long distance training outdoors in the winter. You just feel kind of, you know, powerful, and everybody else is kind of sleeping in the snows, you know, snows filling up the streets, and you're out there running and making the first footprints. I used to love that kind of thing. So then, you build up to, hopefully having like decent weather at the end of March, which, you know, it's kind of iffy, but, you know, you're out there and you're like, you know, spring is coming and I'm out running. Like, it's a very powerful time of year to have a race. You must do it. You must.
That's a great tagline. Spring is coming and I'm out running. I love it. And you know, what's funny is I actually got started with running room too. I forget that part of my own running story is that I knew very little about running and training and all that stuff. And I got started with a 10K from a coworker that was like, hey, come do this charity 10K. So I did. And then that turned into like, oh, what's another distance I can do? Which it was naturally was like the half marathon. But I needed to follow some kind of plan, you know. So I did join a running room on a few occasions, and like, nobody my age, but it was all older people that were training for marathons and stuff. And I thought it was like, they were all older than me, but it was the coolest thing. Like, they were like endurance athletes. Like, they were going out for 2-hour long runs. And actually, I remember going out with them, and I had very little experience. And I'm like, oh, I'll go out with you and see how long I can last, you know? And about at the halfway mark, I was like, I was dead. I think I ran 25K that day, and like, at least 15K of it I ran by myself because I had to get back. I couldn't go any further with him. And my legs were like cement running back to my car because I had no other choice, you know. And I didn't have my cell phone or anything like that. But anyways, that's my running room story.
Is true that they're very helpful at getting people into running. God. And it is the social part of it as well. Like, I ran at Ottawa half marathon. It's Tulip Festival. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I ran one in Peterborough that was around some frozen lake that was like, it was so bitterly cold. And then another one along Lake Ontario in Grimsby. And that one I learned, tuck in behind somebody that's big and tall, and just kind of get you know, block the wind for you. Like, you learn a lot of good little things from that. But
for sure,
they are very supportive. And we're trying to get some stuff going with Canadian Masters Athletics because we realize that there's people across Canada that don't have places like that to go. So we're trying to build up some support systems for people like in small towns or on their own. And so COVID's been kind of an example of, okay, what can we do when we don't have the normal supports? You know, we don't have like a running group because it's banned. You can't be in, you know, can't meet in the store and have your clinic and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So as Canadian Masters, we're trying to figure out some of those things. So COVID's helped us kind of along the way. We've started a little series of seminars. And we're going to try some other things too. you know, helping people find coaches and helping people connect. So yeah, that's important.
Totally. And what would you say, because you started back up late, would you say, you know, because I mean, my good friends, Kat and Kev, they became like Ironman athletes, but they got in like in their, you know, late 30s, early 40s. So it's a story I've heard, but I'm always curious to see, like, you know, you got in because of, a coworker got back into it. But like for somebody that wants to make a change, like late in life, you know, like who maybe isn't as physically active, what would you say to somebody like that?
Oh, just start. If running teaches you nothing, it should basically teach you just put one foot in front of the other and get going. Like it's one step at a time, one interval at a time, one block at a time, whatever it is. It's really in its simplest form. It is simple. Like so go out onto a street and run to the next telephone pole, and then, you know, walk however long you feel you need to, and then do it again, and then keep doing that, and then build up. Like I'm seeing people doing that in my neighborhood right now. Mm. Like I just think that's, you got to start somewhere. So you take one step and you get started, and there's lots of support out there. And I also think too, people have to find their own niche. Like you mentioned about the triathletes, like that's not for me. Like I would not be comfortable with the swimming part, the biking I would love and the running, but people have to find what works for them. That's one thing I really like about athletics is that there's so much variety. Like even when people get injured, they look around and see what other events there are, because we've got running, jumping, throwing, and race walking, long distance, short sprints. Like it's all there. So I've been injured in the past where I was like, you know, this leg isn't cooperating, but oh, I could do shot put. So I'll do shot put for a little period of time. I'm not good, but there's the element of power coming from your legs. Mm-hmm. And so I can do shot put. I know people that have had injuries in the sprinting. I'll say mainly hips, sometimes knees, but like mainly hips. And then they go to race walking or longer distance. It's just, it might be easier on whatever it is that's bothering them, so they try that. And like you mentioned about, you know, the endurance that some people have, like, so some people have that endurance. Like I can't imagine doing an ultra marathon or, you know, ultra running. Like those are like, wow, that's like to keep going. For me, it's sprinting. So, you know, I think people should look around and find, like, what is it that you really like to do? It might be something that you did as a kid, and it might be something totally brand new. Like one of our great Canadian women in athletics was Olga Kotelko, started at age 77 with no background in athletics, not a running background at all. She played softball. And at age 77, she was getting a little bit nervous about getting plowed down in a field, like somebody, you know, going back to catch a ball and knocking her over. So she started track, and she became like such an icon. She was totally amazing. And she did jumping, like long jump. She did some high jump. She did a lot of throws and the running. Like, how cool is that? Like, why not?
Yeah, why not? And it's such a good it's such a good attitude to have. And I hear you say, I hear it in your voice too, when you say like, oh, I wanted to try the hurdles, or I wanted to try this or try that. I think a lot of it too is that people are scared to fail at something. And I think it almost can even stop somebody from trying, is the fear of failure. And so I think it's a really important lesson to learn, and to learn that that's just how it goes when you start something new, is that you're not failing, you're learning, you know, it's
it's there's only one way to get better is to keep trying, you know?
And you learn from the failures too. And really, we tell each other at Master's Track, so, like as soon as somebody new comes, they're very conscious. They think that everybody's watching them go around the track, especially when it's indoor. So if you picture an indoor track that's a 200-meter track, and it's small, and they feel it's like a fishbowl that everybody's everybody's watching them. Well, you know what? It's not. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. They they yes, they watch in the sense of like I don't know, it's more like a curiosity, but it's never in a judgmental way, like, oh my gosh, that person is slow. Like, it's not at all. It's more like everybody is cheering everybody else who's out there. Like, we get it. We get it how you have to balance your family and your career and your daily life and your parents and your kids and everything that, you know, is, you know, all those influences on you to find time to train and to get out there to do that. So fear of failure, yeah, I know that people sometimes feel that way, but like, why? Like, why? It really, it's, no, get out there and try. Just do it. I think somebody adopted that slogan already, but
I think it was Nike. So why didn't you continue with the distance stuff? Because you said you were running half marathons and stuff at that time. Like, what drew you back to shorter distances?
I was at the track doing a workout for one of the clinics from the running room, and I just loved it. It was like 200 meter repeats or something at a track in Toronto. And the rest of the group was moaning and groaning like, why are we doing this? Like, they didn't get it. They didn't get why you would do, you know, short sprints to help your 5K or your 10K or your half marathon. And I didn't care about that part. Like, I mean, yeah, I'd wanted to get faster at a 10K or a half marathon, but I was loving the sprinting. And somebody said, well, why aren't you doing sprinting then, if that's what you want to do? And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, adults don't do sprinting. And they told me about Ontario Masters Athletics. Yeah, they put on meets and you can go and you can compete. Well, as soon as I looked into it and found out, I was like, okay, this is for me. This is what I need to be doing. So I
came on.
There was a little bit of a transition. Like, I did a couple of meets. But I'd still, you know, when you sign up for a race, like, I was going to finish, like, I was not going to stop. So I had signed up for, I'm thinking it was Scotiabank that was in the fall, like it was October. And I started with my coach, probably about September. And I was like, I got to tell you, I've signed up for this half marathon in a few weeks, but I want to do the sprint training. Honestly, I want to do the sprint training. So I was doing a combination of both. It was not a good plan, but it was okay for the half marathon. I did fine. But I was just like, okay, let's leave this behind and let's go to the sprinting. And my coach that I had found, Bruce Mitchell, when I was introduced to him, he said he had seen a couple of my little tryout races. And he said, I think you've got potential and, you know, you ran as a kid, so you know what it's about. He said, if you want to do this, I will match what you put in. So if you want to go, you know, if you really want to train hard for this, I will match that. If you just want to be casual and just, you know, come out once in a while and try it, see what the sprinting is like, that's fine. That's fine. And so that was the best attitude to have. Like I guess maybe goes back to that, you know, fear of failure. No, like, let's just try it. So I better try it. I'm going to give it whole hog. So I did. And honestly, he totally matched what I did at that time. And it was awesome. And same with my coach now. Like, coaches, like, they put in so much. I owe them both so much. Like, they have kept me going and encouraged me and challenged me, you know, all through the years. So I owe them both a lot.
Yeah. And why the coaching change?
Oh, Bruce retired. Bruce retired.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He retired and moved away to a small town in Southern Ontario. And so I was like, okay, now what? And ended up with Jamal, and it's been a great change. Like, it kind of reinvigorates you too. And they do have some coaching philosophies that are the same, and some that are quite different. And it's good. They've both been super.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, every coach has a different style. It's mm-hmm. pretty, I know, like, recently from changing coaches, like, you're kind of looking, what's this coach doing, asking friends questions about what their coaches are doing. And, you know, because everyone's different, you mm-hmm. know. So I'm just curious, like, how you might have came to the, you know, to Jamal as the next coach for you. Was it like a big process?
Yeah, little bit of stop start in between there, and you know, things. I had a few injuries and trying to get over that, and then when I met Jamal, I was like, you know, I think this will click, and we've been together since 2016, 2017. So yeah. Yeah, it's been really good. And our group is really good too, which I really like. What I had from the beginning as well. And so with Bruce, I had mostly men, a couple of women, and they were all kind of students of the sport, always trying to, okay, what about this? And what should we do for our weight training? And like, it was a bit more of a process. Than it is with Jamal, maybe. So we worked together. Bruce had it figured out, and a couple of the men teammates as well. So if we wanted to do, say, trying to remember back how we did that. Like, let's say we were doing a 300, and Bruce wanted me challenged at the end. Where should somebody start so that we would be kind of together at the end?
I see.
Yeah, that was kind of cool that we did that. Or we would work it so that, okay, we're working on starts. We would sort of stagger. So who's going to be kind of a rabbit and that kind of thing. That was kind of fun. So it was a mm-hmm. varied group that way. That was fun. With Jamal, what I really like in a different way is I've got high schoolers, some elite athletes that he's like Olympic bound athletes that he's training. And as I said before, these women that are, we're kind of a ragtag group of some little bit more recreational and some of us a little bit competitive. And such a varied group is really good. It's really good. So right now with COVID, we've got a stagger. So it's a bit of, We're not always, like, we would love to all be together, so can't always do that. But so sometimes the training, because of timing, will sometimes switch. So, and me also being, because I'm like 100, 200, 400 runner, sometimes I will be more with a sprinter group who I guess actually tend to be the younger ones. And then sometimes I'm with some of the elites, because they're sort of 200, there's a couple 200, 400 meter runners there. And so it's mm-hmm. it's good for all of us, because we can kind of, kind of find different groups to combine with and enhance your training.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It helps to have those feet in front of you, you know?
Yeah.
What, I'm just curious, and I mean this in the most, like, the nicest way possible, but like, what do the kids say? Do they say anything to you, or do they ask you questions, or are they as impressed as like I am right now, like about the things you're doing and in your sport and, you know, like doing workouts with them and stuff like that?
Yeah. Yeah. They're the sweetest and very supportive. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had ageism comments from them, like are you nuts, like why are you doing this, like I've never really thought about that. They're very supportive, and sometimes that surprises me. They'll like, if when I've got an award or something, then they're all like, oh, that's amazing, like, oh, you're awesome, you wow. And I'm sort of like, oh, you thought that, like I don't know, like you don't hear it every day kind of thing. Like mm-hmm. we just do it. Like we're teammates. So I guess in the long run, that's sort of the best attitude, that they don't look at me and say, like, Carla, are you nuts? Like, why are you doing this workout's too hard for you? You should go sit down and rest. No, they don't. And I try to, this sounds corny, but it is true. I do kind of try to be an example. Like, so if some of them are moaning and groaning about something, and I try to, I haven't always been this way, but I do try to sort of say to myself, okay, suck it up. Like, if the coach is asking us to do something, then he expects that we can do it. Bruce used to say this to me a lot, and I've gone through the same thing with Jamal. If I say to you, this is what you should run this next interval in, or this, you know, set, like, why are you doubting? And Jamal will usually say, what did you do the last workout at when we did this before? What was your time? Oh, yeah, okay. So if you did so many seconds for that interval last time, so I've just increased it a little bit. We're just going a little faster, da-da-da. You might have a little more rest, whatever. So you can do it. Like what, you know? So I don't even say anymore. It's like, if you've given me the workout and that's the time goal, oh, okay. You must know that I can do that. So I will remind the kids. I'll turn to the kids and say, wait a minute. We did this workout before. What were the times we got before? And we kind of, sometimes we'll sort of go through the group and yeah, I did that. Oh, okay. And then you sort of square your shoulders and you step up and you say, okay, come on, let's go do it. We can do it.
Right. That's so cool. I love that. When did it become a job for you? Because I know you said that where like, this is what you do, you know, but when did it become work?
What do they say? It's not work if you love it. I don't know. That's funny. it's happened so gradually, I guess. I guess when I retired, because, before I retired from teaching, so 2011. So then, you know, you've got so much to balance, and that's, I have so much respect for all my master's competitors because I know what they're balancing, and we each know all the things that we have to, all our ducks to be in a row before we get out to train. So great respect there. So when I retired, then it becomes a little more, you know, you've got a little more time. And I had people say to me, mostly from school, oh, now that you're retired, you're going to be training all the time. Not exactly. That'll kill me. Like you don't like you still put in the training, but you have to still have balance to the rest of your life. Like you can't, it's not full time. You work things in, like you, okay. So during COVID, for instance, I've done a lot of walking with friends. So is that training? No, it's social. It's keeping in touch with friends. And yeah, it's kind of like a recovery from whatever I did at track this morning. So, I guess that's how it becomes a lifestyle rather than a job. It's a way of life.
Right. That's great. Do you ever think that this would be it for you? Like, do you ever think that you'd be at this point, like in your professional career, let's say, or your second career, like looking back, do you ever think that this would ever have been a possibility? And does it surprise you a little bit?
Oh, surprises me enormously. Like, oh, wow. No, I never would have thought that. Even starting with Masters Track, one of the very first races I did was, it was with Avril Douglas, who is a runner, I'm going to say she's more than 5 years because she's in the category ahead. So she's, I'm going to say 7 years ahead of me. I ran in a race with her at York, where we were having, I think it was an Ontario Masters meet. She broke the world record in the 200 meters. And I was behind her because sometimes age groups were combined. So I was behind her. And when I heard she broke the world record, and it was one of the first races I'd done, and I really, at that point, I didn't know what I was doing, like coming back. I was just sort of finding my way. And I was like, wow, there's world records in this? And so I, you know, I went home and researched this, and there's records in this. I wonder if I could do that time. So that was kind of when I started thinking of it like, oh, wow, there's goals. I can, you know, I can set standards for myself and try to achieve this and so on. But to think that I would ever get this many world records and this many, you know, gold medals and awards, no, no, no. I was doing it because I love to do it. And I still, like, the awards and everything are lovely. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's a, you know, respect from my peers and so on and that kind of thing. It's awesome and it feels great. But at the same time, it's like, I have this thing about, like, I just want to show what women 60, 65, 70 can do. Like, it's just like, I'm out there trying to do my best. And if that sets a standard for other people, I think that's a good thing. And I want them to look at it and say, like I did to Avril, and I know Avril, and I know she feels the same. It's like, oh, I wonder, could I beat that? Like, I'm going to keep training and I'm going to try and get better and I'll see if I can beat that. And if that's what women 65 can do and 70 can do, and I'm going to keep going 75, like if that's what we can do, like, let us at it. Like, we'll show you.
Right. Then there's no doubt there. I mean, I'm so glad that I've been able to add you to a strong list of female runners to this podcast and interviews that I've done. And at such a high level as well. And I'm like constantly like in awe of like the accomplishments of all the female runners that we've had on the show and ones that are getting up there in age too. And it does not determine, like, okay, to a certain extent, it can determine like your performance, but the fact that they're still performing at such a high level and still setting goals and crushing their goals and like, you're right, like proving everybody or showing everybody what they can do, you know, it's like, it's inspiring for me and really motivating, I'm sure, for a lot of young female runners or they don't even have to be young. Like you're saying, like people your age, like, seeing what you're doing it's amazing to see and watch and witness, you know? So yeah, good on you for that. And, yeah, I think it's absolutely unbelievable.
Thanks. I'll say thanks on behalf of all of us, because it is something that you just like, for somebody to say that they're inspired and motivated, then you have to take the next step. Like it's see those accomplishments and then translate that into doing something for yourself, which is small steps.
Right. I was going to ask you about you mentioned balance in your life and like, how do you achieve that? And also, is it tougher? Do you find it's getting tougher to recover from workouts, or have you now, you have such a great balance with, you know, weight training and maybe cross training. I don't know what the secret is, but maybe you can shed some light on recovery, injury prevention, these types of things.
Okay. Starting with like, it's all about prehab. And so it doesn't turn into rehab. So, <Yeah. laughs> so the prehab stuff is like you say, the weight training for the strength, the cross training to, you know, to save your legs and to build up your endurance, like in the pool or on a bike or for me, long distance running. And then stretching, you know, yoga, all that kind of stuff. And so the daily life things you do, that's, I consider that all prehab for what you do on the track, because that's hard and it's intense and it's, it's deadly on your body. Like, well, I shouldn't say deadly. It's really hard on your body. And so you've got to make sure you're able to withstand that the best that you can. So those things are all really, really important. And then, you know, the nutrition and the, you know, that's all common sense stuff. And, you know, there's lots written on that, and you've got to, you know, you've got to be fueled, and then you've got to be, you know, refueled after. So that's part of that balance, is all that prehab stuff. And then the rehab stuff is like rehab in the sense of what do you do to recover so that you've got, you're able to do another session the next day or 2 days. That's important too. So that's, you know, the stretching. We do a lot of band work, you know, with those little elastic, other like sort of fabric elastic bands, and then, you know, around your knees or around your ankles, and, you know, clamshells and you know, glute lifts and all that kind of stuff. Like that's really important. That's, I consider that part of rehab. It's sort of like after the track session. So that's important too. I do a few little things I throw in, and I see them as very important. Haven't been so good at it during COVID because of not being able to have a pool, but I am a big proponent of pool running. I think it's really, really good. I started it when I was with Bruce. I think I first started it due to an injury when I couldn't be putting pressure on the legs on the track. But I quickly realized I'm onto something here. This is really good for me, and I think for a lot of runners. So what I would do, once a week, I would go to the pool, and I started out, I was just sort of running. I often would choose, like when I was with Bruce, we would train, let's say Saturday, hard workout, Sunday, kind of relax. Monday, I would do a pool workout. I found it was almost like a massage for the legs, and yet I could build cardio, stay off the legs, and I was surprised to find build speed. So at first, I did kind of like I had a flotation belt around my waist, and I would just do a running motion in the lanes. And then I don't know if I read something or I saw somebody. I got the idea to put a bungee cord hooked on the back, so to anchor me to the side of the pool. And then I did a little bit of reading on it and found out how you could adapt workouts. And so Bruce and I talked about it. Okay, how am I going to do this? So I would translate the track workout to a pool workout. So like simple things like, because you don't want too much rest in the pool, like you don't really need it. So let's just say 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off is kind of a typical thing. Or even like 2 minutes on, 30 seconds off for, you know, maybe 5 reps or whatever, something like that. And there, if you go on the internet, there's lots of different variations. And so that I found was really good, a really good a balancing thing to what I was doing on the track. And I've done it since. We haven't been able to do it during COVID. I've done it when I've been with Jamal. I'm trying to remember which injury it was. I'm going to say, was it my Achilles? Or I think it was my Achilles. I had an Achilles problem one time. And so painful. And so in the pool, so Jamal said what the workout was going to be. I did some on the elliptical. The bike bothered me, but the elliptical did not. There was a certain style of elliptical. Luckily, I had the choice of two different types of ellipticals, and some are a little bit too much on the Achilles, like too much strain. There was one type of elliptical I could use, like I had to experiment. And so we translated the workouts to get the same, same purpose accomplished. And so we did the same for the pool, and that was really good. Another thing it's good.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. And I also use a little trampoline, a mini trampoline.
Okay. Yeah. I've felt some soreness in my Achilles too. So I guess I have to try some of that stuff out. It's interesting to hear, different methods to rehab from injuries like that.
Mm-hmm.
I never tried the pool running thing though.
Oh, so. It's very good. It's very good. And I'm not much of a swimmer. So to have the support belt, flotation belt around my waist, and the bungee cord, and you can really go fast. Like you can, but you've got the resistance. So we do a lot of resistance stuff, like with sleds and pull things, like pull bands and so on. So it fits right in.
That's great. I just wanted to ask you just about, like, overall, you know, you're part of the running now and what it is, but can you comment on just like how running the culture has changed over the years a little bit?
I think it's so much more accepted to be a runner. Like, you go back to all the stuff in the 60s and, you know, jogging started and so on. And I think now it's much more of a choice of people for keeping fit, which is really good. And I really love that we have all these choices. So athletics, with all the range that we've got, from sprints to mid distance and long distance sprints and, you know, distance running and then the road races and the race walking and, you know, marathons and all that kind of stuff. So there's that. Then there's also like triathlons and ultra marathons, adventure races, trail runs, cross country. There's all those choices too. So I think, so the culture has changed in that we've got more choices. The base is still there, the running, and then it's broadened. So we've got all these wonderful choices.
Yeah, it's the variety is there for sure. It's like literally something for everybody, you know. Marathoning isn't for all runners, and I think a lot of people are finding the trails too, which is great. And yeah, I have a little bit, but I'm a bit too clumsy for the trail. So it's, I tend to hit my feet a lot on rocks and roots. So that doesn't really work.
See, that's an element of speed. I'm the same. Like I watch people that do our cross country, the Masters men, they're like kamikaze, like pell mell down a slope and so on. And I'm like picking my way over rocks and roots. So yeah, you got to have a balance there. Like I don't have that kamikaze attitude there to do that, for but sure. I like it. I've done cross country in the fall sometimes for change it up, and also just a little bit of that endurance, and it slows you down to appreciate your surroundings and nature, and that's a wonderful thing too. So it's got its benefits.
For sure. What are you after now? Like, what do your goals look like now?
It's hard with this, you know, now we got another lockdown and with COVID. So I'm just going to carry on and just like that, that is the goal, like to carry on. So yeah, I want to get closer to the, running my age in the 400. And the really neat thing about Masters too is with our 5-year age groups. So every 5 years you're in a new age group and you've got new records to chase and so on. And I'm not one really to chase records in that sense. It's just that, okay, now what can I do, you know, now that I'm in the next age group? Like, can I, you know, stay as fast as I was? No, you can't, but we have something in Masters called age grading. And it's you know, it's all statistics, and the statistics can show you, are you keeping the same speed according to your age? So, you know, it's all percentages and so on. And then one of my teammates has come up with something called Duncan Score, which you can Google, and it's kind of an alternative to age grading, and it's all statistics. It's taking the number of people that have done the event before and what their times are and comparing them to, you know, different standards. The age grading compares them to what did a young person do. And Duncan Score takes it comparing to what other people your age have done. It comes out with a percentile. So that's really cool. So as far as age grading, I like to see that my age grading stays up there. It's something people can also use to find their best event. So you can take your age grading, say for a 5K, a 10K, 400 meters, 200 meters, whatever, you plug in, you know, and use, okay, my age grading for a 5K is really, really good. My age grading for, you know, 100 meters, 200 meters, you know, not so good. So you can sort of see, oh, like over time, what would be the best event for a person.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Like to be able to compare yourself to others. And I think that's a really great thing. The running is also, you said, allowed you to travel and stuff. Where's your favorite place to run?
Favorite place to run?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll just if I go in my neighborhood, I like going on the trails. I live just kind of next to the Rouge Valley trails, and it's awesome. And they're redoing that route, and it'll part of the waterfront trail comes up and connects, and it's in the woods, and I can do some just, you know, casual running, but like a track anywhere. But I have to say, I was thinking about my early days in training. We used to train at Centennial Park in Etobicoke, and it's such an awesome thing to do hills. It's like an old garbage dump made into a ski hill. And so you do hill training, going up the side of the hill, you get to the top, you look down and you can see the track where you're going to finish your workout. But at the same time, I remember standing there with Bruce, and we would be looking at tennis courts, frisbee golf, softball, kids on their bikes, like just saying, like, if their parents only knew, like going down the hill, like very steep hills on their bikes, like total, it's not motocross or whatever, but it was so dangerous. They would be racing each other, people jogging, casual road runners, families walking. So favorite place to run, like standing up on the top of that hill and seeing all these people being physically active and having run to the top of that hill. It's kind of like, wow, this is what life is about. Like challenging yourself, being active, being strong and powerful. That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's so great. Yeah, to watch that, and it's a lot of what you stand for too, right? So that's a beautiful thing, full circle kind of thing.
Yeah, that's making me
What's that?
That's making me grin ear to ear just thinking of that. Yeah. Like
I know, like, what's a message like you want to share with people? I know you speak to a lot of people as well and share your journey, but what's like one of your key messages that you love to share?
I would say, I used to tell my school kids, like, just like find something that you're passionate about. It makes life so much more interesting and challenging too. Like it could be dance, it could be math, it could be art, something. So, I mean, I think there should be something physical that they find as well. And I think there are so many choices, so they certainly could include something physical in that. But if you've got any passion in your life, that it just makes things so much more interesting. The people that you meet, you know, the places you can go, the things you learn, and it can be ever evolving too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, yeah, I ran as a kid. Did I ever think I'd be doing this as an adult now? No, but you know, it is interesting that that passion carried me through for so long.
Right. And what has running taught you?
Oh, so much, so much. It is that kind of thing of putting one foot in front of the other and just carrying on. Like, so whatever happens in your life, that, you know, you just have to keep going. So that, certain kinds of mental toughness, can come from running, like standing on the start line of a 400 calming yourself down and you know, saying to yourself, yeah, once around, and saying, you know, I can do this. So, you know, you calm your mind and you know, get your breath ready and you gather your thoughts to put everything into what's ahead of you. But it still comes down to, you know, one step at a time and just going for it. So, yeah, I would say that's those are big lessons, aren't they?
Yeah, that's great. And gives us some insight into, you know, some little mantras and stuff that you might have when you're nervous or on the starting line, or that mental game it's got to be sharp too.
And so, that applies to life. How that's going to apply anywhere in your life. You know, just
totally
take a step.
For sure. And what does running mean to you? What does this all mean to you?
It's I guess because it's a lifestyle that it's precious. It's you know, it can be taken away. Like, I mean, I could suffer illness, injury, whatever, and it could be gone. So what would I do? Like, if I said it meant everything, I'd still have the passion for watching people and appreciating and enjoying it. You know, so if you say it's your everything and then you were faced with losing it, that's a pretty scary thought, but yeah, it's a lifestyle. So all the things that go into it, like the prehab and the mental training and all the training that you do, like it comes together as a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. It's, you know, it's a good answer. It's it just becomes a part of what we do, right? Mm. It's you know, through running, I haven't been running as long, but, you know, it's led me to meeting tons of people in the community. It's led me to some events that I never thought I could do. It led me to this podcast. It leads me to conversations with interesting people like yourself. So yeah, it's fun to hear. I ask that question to everybody. I like to hear how it changes and there's no wrong answer to that. It means something different for everybody, but mm-hmm. it's what connects us too, you know, at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's special.
For sure. Well, I want to say that I really appreciate your time. I don't know, is there any place that people can find out more about you? Or are you active on social? Or
I am on Instagram and I am on Facebook. Yeah, that's... Yeah, if people want to connect that way and ask me more, that's fine. Yeah. I love to share with people what I do. So if people want to reach out and ask questions, like that's nice. Like
for sure. Yeah. And I really I'm really grateful for your time, and I hope people can gain something from this chat. And like I opened up, I think, you know, age is just a number, and I think it's absolutely incredible what you've been able to accomplish when you've accomplished it in your life. And that gives me hope for running my 400 in my age one day.
You may have a new goal.
That's gonna be it. Thanks so much, Carla. We'll be in touch.
Thank you. Those are interesting questions, and I hope people have learned that, you know, just get out there and give it a try.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by the WRG Run Club. What's really good is running with people who are fun, friendly, and positive. But seeing as we can't do that in person right now, let's try our best to stay connected through social media. How can you do that? Every Monday, we'll connect through a virtual run. You can go out there at any time of the day and run any distance you choose. When you get home, share your run with us on Instagram by tagging at WRGRuns, and we'll post it in our stories for everyone to see. It's a tough time for everyone, so hopefully this helps us stay motivated to get out there and keep moving. If you want to learn more, visit our website, imarunner.ca, and sign up for our weekly newsletter. Hope to see you all soon.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it.
The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in St. Henry, Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and hosted by Justin Pugliese.